Hello there, good evening. Welcome to the Jim Bohannon Show from Westwood One Radio. We're at 1-866-50-JIMBO, 1-866-505-4626. Online, you'll find us at jimbotalk.net, and you can follow me on Twitter at jimbotalks. We're talking in this portion of the program with Stephen Hayward. He's a visiting professor at the University of California, Berkeley, and his website, powerlineblog.com. And he has also written Patriotism is Not Enough. This is published by Encounter Books and subtitled Harry Jaffa, Walter Burns and the Arguments That Redefined American Conservatism. Thank you for being with us tonight.
Well, hi, Jimbo. Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. It would seem that American conservatism has long been tugged in many directions. I've always argued that the term conservative is about as descriptive as the term Hispanic. Oh, Cuban American, Mexican American, Puerto Rican, whatever chunk of Central America. The term Hispanic just doesn't convey a lot of information. Conservative? You got your libertarian conservative, you got your social conservative, you got your isolationist conservative, you got your neoconservative, you got your supply sider, you got your deficit hawk. You got all kinds of people who grab this term conservative. So I've always felt that, frankly, the term, even the term American conservatism in the subtitle of your book, well, which branch are you talking about? Isn't that part of the problem here, is just defining it?
Well, right. You've got that was a nice taxonomy of different conservative factions that you gave. I'll add one. I think there are grumpy conservatives. I call grumpy cons for short. Right? But, you know, if you take, the word conservative in its plain, ordinary meaning of conserving something, you know, conserving resources, conserving a tradition, part of what I'm trying to get at here is that there are some, despite all the differences that you can point out, as you did, there are some aspects of the American tradition that make the conservatism in America distinct from the way it is in Europe. You know, European conservatism, which we have some similarities to, it's very class conscious. You still have, you know, Lord Halifax and Sir Roger so-and-so in Britain and a lot of class consciousness in the rest of the European continent. And, you know, we have classes in America. I'm not denying that. But, you know, we explicitly in our Constitution and in a lot of our social teaching, you know, emphasize class mobility. And, you know, we actually have stipulations in the Constitution against titles of nobility. And a lot of our laws are about trying to break up landed estates back at the time of the Revolution. That's just a few items about how we have our own distinct tradition. And I'm trying to explain that in the book about why American patriotism is a different kind of thing than, say, French patriotism.
It's a point that is certainly well taken. How much of it has to do with the fact that you can move to France, become naturalized, but you'll never really be a Frenchman, whereas anybody can move here and go through the process, and they can become an American, as red, white, and blue as any of us? How much of it has to do with the very essence of our history of coming from other places?
Yeah, that has a lot to do with it. In fact, what you just said is very close to something Ronald Reagan said. In fact, oddly enough, when he signed the Immigration Reform Act of 1986, says, you know, you can't really become a German, you can't really become a Frenchman, I mean, you could be a legal citizen, but anybody can become an American in a very real sense, you know, by adopting the country's principles, he went on to say. And, you know, I don't know much about the naturalization rights of any other foreign countries, but, you know, I do know about America. You know, we have to swear loyalty to our Constitution, so you're not going to be here to the country to undermine it or subvert the country. And so, you know, you take a loyalty to the principles of the country when you become an American citizen as a foreign-born person. And I don't think any of the other countries do that. I think they just hand you a document.
So in other words, that whole process that we hear about in this country, and, of course, the great swearing-in that occurs in this country, and sometimes you'll see videos of that. It's a very impressive ceremony. In the other countries, it's more like 25 cents in coin and a box top?
I think so, yeah. Well, of course, a lot of other countries, you know, they don't, most countries don't let in just anybody. They have very strict requirements, and you've got to buy your way in or have certain skills. And I know it's a controversial subject here right now, of course, but, you know, since the beginning, we've pretty much taken everybody and anybody who could come here and haven't tried to make those kinds of, you know, again, class distinctions of who could come here.
To an extent. Of course, the big issue right now, and not that we're going to spend much time on this because it's not the topic of the book, Patriotism is Not Enough, but the fact is that this is not a great national debate right now about immigration. It is a great national debate about law enforcement and the fact that in a world of sovereign nations, which is where we are, like it or not, Sovereign nations have the absolute right at their discretion, however arbitrarily, to determine who gets into their country, how many, for what reason, and for how long.
Right.
Now, that's not even debatable.
What kind of people they should become if they want to come here and stay here, yes.
Exactly. That's not even debatable. You can debate whether it ought to be that way. I would debate that it should, for the most part. But at least that would be debatable. The fact that this is the way it is in this world is not debatable, nor is the fact that for at least another century or two, that the only alternatives are nation-states or anarchy. So, anyway, enough about that. The title of the book is rather intriguing, and then I also want to get into the names that that follow in the subtitle. Patriotism is not enough. How did you derive that title?
Well, it's something that one of the characters I write about in the book, Harry Jaffa, who I can explain more in a moment, it was something he used to say in the classroom, and I was one of his students. And, you know, what he was saying is actually, again, to invoke Ronald Reagan, you know, Ronald Reagan's farewell address in 1989, he had a long passage at the end in the familiar tradition of presidents who give warnings about the necessity of having what Reagan called informed patriotism. You know, if you go back to the very beginning of the country and you look at things like the Virginia Declaration of Rights in 1778, whenever it was written, and the Massachusetts Constitution of 1780, they both say things like this: a frequent recurrence to fundamental principles is necessary for the survival of liberty. And so that's the point of patriotism is not enough. It's not enough just to be attached to your country because it's your country or your father's country. In America, maybe this connects to the idea of American exceptionalism. The ground of patriotism are the principles of the country, our commitment to democracy and individual liberty and individual rights and above all, constitutional rule.
Yeah. And this raised another question, of course, with this new view that, we must not have a melting pot. Heavens, that would be cultural imperialism. We've created a lot of our own problems, have we not, by this rather myopic notion that you don't have to make any effort to make Americans?
You know, this is an astonishing turnabout. You know, once upon a time, I can remember, and I think you, Jim, are old enough to remember, when liberals celebrated the melting pot. That was one of the great things about America, is that we are a melting pot. And now it's controversial or even, as you say, it's thought to be cultural imperialism or cultural appropriation, and we now emphasize separateness, and I think this is very dangerous and a very bad development. But, an earlier generation of liberals, people like Arthur Schlesinger in the 50s, they would have, and they did celebrate the melting pot. So something's gone wrong here in the last couple of decades that we've come to this pass.
Yeah, it really has. Now then, if you could give us a little background on the two names in the subtitle, Harry Jaffa and Walter Burns.
Right, yeah, probably not well known. I mean, they were important conservative intellectuals, and I say not well known to many of your listeners, but they're very influential, and I think they and some other people I write about in the book, I try to tell a story of individual thinkers and their ideas that would, and it's written for a non-specialist audience, even though I'm an academic, to try and draw people into sort of these large figures. So, I mean, one thing I'll say about Harry Jaffa that I think should interest people is that, among other things, he wrote the famous lines for Barry Goldwater in 1964, extremism in defense of liberty is no vice, moderation in the defense of justice is no virtue. And he contributed a lot of other things to Goldwater's presidential campaign. And, of course, that's one of the lines, one of the most memorable lines in presidential campaign rhetoric, even though Goldwater lost, right?
Well, very much so. In fact, because that line was used to absolutely crucify him, I can virtually quote verbatim the Washington, the Saturday Evening Post editorial. The Saturday Evening Post, for those who don't remember that magazine, never, ever, ever, did anything political, and never, ever, ever editorialized. They ran an editorial supporting Johnson and Humphrey over Goldwater and Miller, and the editorial included the line that after Goldwater tried to explain that statement about extremism in the defense of liberty, he had said that Eisenhower, when he landed at Normandy, was being an extremist. The Saturday Evening Post said, that's not what Eisenhower meant. That's not what Goldwater meant. He knew exactly what he meant, and so did every night rider and cross burner in the South. I mean, he was absolutely excoriated for that line.
Yeah, well, I know he was. It was a very imprudent line. I have a whole chapter in the book that talks about how Goldwater came to want to use that line in a speech. He was really mad at people like Nelson Rockefeller and Governor Scranton of Pennsylvania and other people, and he just said, screw it, I'm going to attack these people. And so, I mean, even Professor Jaffa, as you know, I knew him, knew that the line had been a mistake. But it's still an interesting aspect of history that this guy was involved in a presidential campaign and lots of other things. The other person I took as a figure to launch the book or anchor it is Walter Burns, who bears a lot of responsibility for reviving the jurisprudence of original intent, which is, you know, very much on our mind these days, these Supreme Court battles and, you know, the confirmation of Judge Gorsuch coming up shortly, probably for the Supreme Court. And, you know, the idea of originalism was, you know, dead as a doornail back in the 50s and 60s. And a lot of people, Burns is not the only one, but he was a very important figure in saying, no, wait a minute, we need to go back to the original intentions of the people who wrote the Constitution to anchor our constitutional law. Otherwise, we're just going to have judicial activism as far as the eye can see. And he wrote a number of very good books on that problem.
1-866-50-JIMBO is our number, 1-866-50-54626. We're going to come back and talk some more with our guest, Stephen Hayward, about his book, Patriotism is Not Enough. And for the record, Stephen Hayward is visiting scholar at the Institute of Governmental Studies at the University of California, Berkeley, the author of the two-volume political biography, The Age of Reagan, The Fall of the Old Liberal Order, and The Age of Reagan, The Conservative Counter-Revolution. He has written for the New York Times, Washington Post, Wall Street Journal, and a number of publications. His website, again, is powerlineblog.com, and we'll be back with more in just a second after we quote